This is a page out of the Australian today about Harry Potter, and it's fascinating the appeal that this book should have. The last book to have anything like this appeal apparently was Lady Chapman's Lover or something, but this is extraordinary. Everybody's trying to get copies, they're sold out immediately. And it says here that trying to understand, plumb the depths of why there's such fascination, particularly as every children's story implicitly addresses broad questions such as, is the world fundamentally a benevolent or a malevolent place? Can one rely on one's own mind and self? But there is this effort in this to try to bring an understanding in this book to the struggle that children are having with reality and ideality, and that's what's being dealt with at the core of this book. And that issue of ideality versus reality is the issue of the human condition. And just to give you some quick... there's an essay in here titled Resignation, and it deals with an aspect, the most important psychological event, I suggest, in human life that's never been acknowledged. And I'm suggesting that, and there's another essay in here about Plato's cave allegory, which talks about humans being chained up in a cave under the ground, unable to face the sun, which is in Plato's imagery stands for the greater good. If you like the ideals of life, humans are being competitive, aggressive and selfish, when clearly the ideals are to be cooperative, loving and selfless, and we've never been able to reconcile the two. So there's a dark side of ourselves and our behaviour, when clearly there are the ideals. And if you try to face down ideality without an understanding of reality, this lack of ideality in ourselves, then you face depression, and the only way to cope with that depression is to block out this issue of the human condition, to live in denial of this deeper subject because it has been unconfrontable since this human condition issue emerged, which Tim intimated was some 2 million years ago. So we've lived in this cave state of denial of the issue of the human condition, which is the issue of good and evil in the human makeup. Now, I know you know that there's lots of books that sort of discuss the good and evil, but not at the core level that I'm referring to. Now, the question is, if children come into the world, do they come in living in this state of denial, or is it something they learn? And I suggest it's something that they learn. The resignation essay here explains that about 11 children are sufficiently able to understand cause and effect and understand how the world works to try to make sense of this underlying core issue in all human affairs of good and evil. And they struggle. They ask mum and dad, you know, why are you shouting at each other? Why are there pictures of dead people in the paper? Why did those people fly that plane into the building? And parents can't answer these questions. They just say, sweetheart, the world's more complicated than it appears, and one day you'll appreciate that. And it's just human nature. You can't do anything about it. But that's no sort of an answer. They want to know why. They come into the world innocent, and they see this massively artificial, superficial world, and this must be egocentric state that everyone's living in, and they can see clearly the disparity, and there's no bridging explanation given. So they try to find an understanding. They ask their parents. There's no answer. Society supplies no answer. So they go underground. So by about 13, they're in their rooms, locked the door, with loud music on, and they're wrestling with this deeper issue that Harry Potter, he's offering some solution for, even if it's sort of magic and these other tools to try to bring some sort of relief to this issue. And by about... So about 14, they're really wrestling manfully with this, struggling with this issue. But then at about 15, they discover the human condition not only exists without, it exists within. And that they discover there are elements of insecurity, of competitiveness, anger, egocentricity, and alienation, all the traits of the human condition within themselves. And that when they try to face ideality in the presence and make a sense of this divisive state within themselves, that's very, very depressing. And what happens eventually, it becomes so depressing, so overwhelming, so difficult and impossible to stand in the presence of the ideals without an understanding of your lack of ideality, that they finally realise they must give up looking at that issue and block it out forever. And they resign to living in denial of the human condition. And they get glandular fever. It's called a kissing disease because it always happens about the same time as puberty. It's often blamed on puberty. But clearly, children at that time of their life, the healthiest time of their whole life, to get glandular fever, their immune system must have run right down. And it's not just the hormones running around, it's something much deeper. It's a psychological war that they're enduring. And it's so overwhelming that finally their immune system does break down and they get glandular fever. And we've been doing talks all around Australia, Tim and I. It's astonishing how many people come after the talk and talk about having had glandular fever at that age. And it's very difficult to talk to people about the human condition post-resignation. You'll read and hear letters from pre-resigned humans who just love this because it's talking about what they're thinking about. But adults have learned not to think about it because it takes them back to an issue that is so dark and depressing that it's dangerous. It's suicidally dangerous. It's that serious an issue. And so there's an essay in there about resignation, and I suggest if you're very sceptical to read that and read about what's happening to children within this explanation that there is this issue that we've never looked at and learned not to look at. But young children do look at it. And this Harry Potter phenomenon at its underlying level is because, albeit sort of mystical, magical sort of, it brings some address. It's an addressing of this issue. But I suggest in time, if you read some of the responses I said of children to being able to talk about this issue and have an explanation given to it, is enormous relief. So I'm suggesting this is the real addressing that issue that children are struggling with, that this is offering some sort of relief from. That's the first little aspect that I thought I'd introduce. The other one is Tim referred to mechanistic scientists such as Charles Birch saying universities are pretty well dead and that they can't deal with subjectivity. Subjectivity at the core is the issue of the human condition. There's an alternative way of looking at science, which is holism. But holism, if you look it up in the dictionary, is not the interrelatedness of matter, but the actual definition is the tendency of matter to form wholes. Now, in America now, there's big debates about why is God excluded from science. But if God is the cooperative ideals of life, and there's a physical law that explains it, Charles Birch has written a book on purpose, physicist Paul Davies has written a book, God, the New Physics, Cosmic Blueprint, all alluding to that there is a reason for the development of order of matter, and that's this law of negative entropy, which causes matter to form ever larger and more stable wholes. But if we were to admit that the meaning of existence is to develop larger and more stable wholes, to form a larger whole, it's vital that the parts of the whole consider the welfare of the whole above their own welfare, behave selflessly. Simply, selfishness is disintegrative, divisive. So if you admit to the purpose of existence being to develop the order of matter, and even go so far as to demystify God and say God is negative entropy, the tendency is cooperative drive in all existence, you're condemning humans. You're bringing them face-to-face with the human condition. Without the explanation of the human condition, you will leave them stranded in massive depression. That's the reason we leave God, leave these greater truths to God. God is sort of, to religion, where these truths are sort of abstractly described and it's not too confronting, where science sensibly looks at the details, the mechanism, that one day might make a clarification of our reality possible. And then when that happens, we can finally safely confront these condemning truths with dignity, without feeling criticised. So the core explanation in this book is the explanation of the human condition, which basically talks about a conflict between our instinct and our intellect. It's quite simple. If an animal is perfectly instinctively orientated, we're the only first animals to become fully conscious, and you make one of those animals conscious. So it's got this perfect instinctive orientation and it starts thinking for itself and starts making choices about what to do with its life. Some of those choices aren't going to be consistent with the instinctive self. There's going to be a war break out between the instinct and the intellect. So as soon as... if you look at how the gene-based learning system works, it's not an insightful learning system. So instincts can give species perfect orientation. They know where to fly every winter and summer, and they fly on their migrations, but they don't understand the damn thing. If one of those birds become conscious and starts to think, I'll think I'll fly down to this aisle and have a rest, the instincts are going to try and pull it back on the flight path. And that bird mustn't stop searching for knowledge. That would be irresponsible. But it can't sit down with its instinctive self and explain what science can now explain, that a nerve-based learning system is insightful, the gene-based learning system can give orientation, but it's not insightful. So unable to refute the effective criticism emanating from its instinctive self, it blocks that criticism out. It says, I've got to do what I've got to do, but I can't explain to you why. I'm not bad, you're implying that I am, to carry out these experiments of self-adjustment. So it blocks it out, it's angry with the criticism,
and he tries to prove the criticism wrong. He becomes angry, egocentric and alienated. These are the underpinning elements of our corrupted, supposed corrupted nature. But if you look at that story, the hero of that story is the bird that had the courage to defy its instinctive self and suffer self-corruption, in the word of the man of the mantra, march into hell for a heavenly cause. And in the book it explains that men took up this role of the sword to champion the ego or the conscious self over the instinctive self, and left women to try to continue the nurturing, and that led to some division and frustration. So we look at the book looks at men and women, and in the framework of finally being able to look at this issue of why we've lived in denial very sensibly, because we were faced with a truth that was too hurtful to bear. And when we find the understanding through science as the liberator that explains why we're good and not bad, that dignifies humans, this doesn't condone our divisive state, it doesn't sanction evil, it heals it by subsiding it. That bird that flew off course and became corrupted, suffered, becoming angry, egocentric, in order to find knowledge, the moment it can explain itself, it no longer has to be angry or alienated, hasn't a block out anymore, and doesn't have to try and prove its worth. So we mature from insecure adolescence to secure adulthood, hence the foundation for man is adulthood. So that's a quick... but it's not as complicated as that. So now we've got 15 minutes. So there's a biological underpinning to this, and that's the biology, basically. We've got a T-shirt that says... Ask me to explain the human issue, turn around the back, and it's got a picture of a stork with a big head symbolising a conscious brain. And it says, instinct can orientate, but only nerves can understand. Therein lies the problem, the emergence of the human condition. And we can look at ourselves now with dignity and look at the dark side without having to live. We can come out of our cave state of denial. This fire, which is, or the sun, as Plato said, symbolises the greater good, which is the cooperative ideals of life, which has historically condemned us, no longer condemn us, and we can depart from our denial, state of denial. And everything we've used, all this artificiality, I mean, this tie you could feed half a dozen starving Ethiopians with that, that's very selfish, but we need it to be materialistic, we need to fight off this implication that we were bad when we weren't, we couldn't explain it. So we needed all this artificial reinforcement to sustain us. But now that we can understand ourselves, we don't need to, we can be spiritual, we can think our way out of this. We don't have to surround ourselves with artificiality and layers of denial and fill in with this castle of sort of... We did a talk on radio in Melbourne with Tim Ferguson, who's a comic. You know, and the first thing one of those was how to explain humour. And I was trying to tell Tim that we are so artificial, after 2 million years of living on this planet unjustly condemned, that we surround ourselves in just layers and layers of artificiality and false forms of reinforcement to sustain ourselves. And every now and again, you know, we're this absolute walking castle of sort of artificiality. We trip over or something and suddenly the facade is broken and the truth is momentarily revealed of just how artificial we really are, and it's a comic. And he said, you all have to think about that. But has anybody got any questions? Tim's here too if you want to ask.